Today, I'm sitting down with EJ Dahlquist, who is the owner of Creative Counseling Solutions right here in Palm Harbor. And I'm super excited to meet EJ and kind of talk more about her business and what she's really passionate about. And that is mental wellness in the business world, mental wellness in the corporate setting. You know, a lot has changed with the way we talk and think about mental wellness over the last couple of years because of COVID and because everything that we went through COVID. So I'm excited to dive into this and kind of share her wisdom, kind of pick her brain on mental wellness and kind of what it means in the corporate setting. So tune in. I really hope you enjoy this conversation with EJ, and let's have a good one. Welcome to another episode of Palm Harbor Local. I'm your host, Florida native and real estate ninja, Donnie Hathaway. You know, I started this podcast because I'm extremely passionate about connecting you with the people and the local businesses that make Palm Harbor so special. Palm Harbor, Florida is a great place to live, work, and play. It has everything you could dream of, from the food, the outdoors, the lifestyle, to the people in the community. I wanted to create a podcast that connected the community and inspired everyone to live better. To join this community and stay up to date on all things Palm Harbor, visit my website. It's palmharborlocal.com and sign up there to join the locals. And remember, together, we keep Palm Harbor local. So welcome, EJ. I appreciate you being on the podcast. EJ Dahlquist, you are the owner of Creative Counseling Solutions.
Yes. Thanks for having me.
So I'm super excited. So you reached out to me originally on Instagram. But I love this topic and kind of what you're doing and kind of like what you're kind of inspired to do and that sort of stuff. So I'm excited to chat with you.
Me too. Thank you.
So why don't we just start right there and tell everybody what it is you do?
Great. Okay. So yes, I'm a licensed mental health counselor and a national certified counselor. And I have a practice in Palm Harbor off US 19. And I see clients for therapy in a traditional setting. And then because of COVID, a lot more hybrid online. But I also am really excited about the part of my practice that's growing. It's corporate mental health training. So I go into businesses and speak about wellness and help them with strategy or planning or training.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. So how did you take us back to the beginning and how did you get started in this career?
Okay. Well, trauma. No. Yeah. So I never thought I would be a counselor. I know I meet some people and they always knew. When I look back at my life, I was always involved in some sort of volunteer work, social work. My parents were really generous. They did a lot of things in the community growing up. I grew up in Sarasota.
Okay.
And so that was kind of a theme. And then I remember the first time I became a client and went in and got counseling. And it was such a transformational experience for me.
Yeah.
And it was so powerful. I really learned a lot about just not just managing emotions, but managing life.
Yeah.
And I thought, how great. This is really an anchor. So when I remember my therapist was the first person I thought I would tell that I was entertaining the idea of going back to grad school to become a therapist. And
yeah.
She was so validating and so encouraging, and I was so grateful. So it just kind of, it led from there.
Yeah. Yeah. So just personal experience. Mm-hmm. What is the schooling like? So what did you have your degree in before? What did you do before this?
Yeah. So my undergrad story is kind of funny. I was a little wayward. I volunteered a lot in school and I had a lot of self-directed classes. Probably I created them in high school and thought I would do deaf education or all different types of work in different communities. So I started at Flagler College, which is a beautiful campus in St. Augustine. And
yeah.
I think I was halfway into my first deaf education class and sign language and my professor and advisor was like, this isn't a good fit for you. I'm like, no.
I don't like it.
What do I do now? And I had a lot of fun at Flagler. If my daughter's listening, yeah. I don't want her to learn from my mistakes. I was surfing a lot and enjoying the beach. And I really didn't know what the plan was. And so I came home and my parents were great. They let me come back home. I worked. At the time, it was called Manatee Community College. But now it's called State College of Florida. It's a four-year, kind of like SBC evolved. Okay. And I went in to the advisor and I said, I really have no idea what to do. Here are all my credits. What should I do? What's the quickest way? And she said, well, psychology and art. And I thought, are you kidding? That sounds fantastic. So I took art classes and I took psychology and I loved it.
Yeah.
And then I ended up transferring to a four-year school in Atlanta, a women's college, Agnes Scott. Amazing school. It was very rigorous and academic and it pushed me. I had fantastic professors in a small setting, but the big benefit of the city of Atlanta. And I had a wonderful scholarship program I got into. And I ended up graduating in a newer program there called Religion and Social Justice. So I did a lot of programs. I worked for refugee resettlement and did art activism. So it was all kind of in that therapeutic realm.
Space. Yeah.
It was great. And the religion piece was great. It was studying cultures. It was more like sociology.
Okay.
And I just loved it. I loved the professors and all that. And I didn't know it was leading me into a helping profession, but it really was a perfect segue.
Yeah.
And then my master's program, once I kind of figured out what it was, I went right into that. And that was a 3-year academic program.
Okay.
And then in the state of Florida, you have 2 years post-grad in a registered license program. So it's really like a 5-year program till you're fully licensed. So it's a big commitment.
Yeah. It's a long time.
It is a long time.
Is that hard to commit to like 5 years? You're like, oh man.
Yeah,
five more years.
They don't sell that in the beginning. They know how to like get you it, you know.
Yeah.
But I do remember the first time I went to like a brown bag lunch where they mapped it out and we all looked at each other like, what have we done? Why are we here? Like, what? But it was, you know, and I think the professor was used to that. And he said, it's one class at a time.
Yeah.
It's one, you know.
Right.
And in Florida, you can really work and earn an income because you can get supervision. You can have licensed therapists over you. So you can still be out in the field. It's not 5 years until you work, but it's 5 years until you get that licensure credit and take your state boards.
Okay. And then you're on your own at that point.
Yeah.
Or you can be on your own, right?
You can be on your own.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
And so after all the schooling and everything, like what led you into like starting your own business? Was that something like you always wanted to do?
It wasn't. I interned right here in Pinellas County in the public defender's office, which sounds kind of strange to be a mental health therapist at a law office.
Yeah.
But they had a wonderful program under Bob Dillinger called the Jail Diversion Program. It was a pilot program. And they proved that on paper, crunching the numbers, they could reduce recidivism. I can't remember the percentage, but it was really significant through counseling, medication, psychiatric care, bus passes, sometimes treatment.
Mm-hmm.
And that was less than sending them to jail. So we had this great program. So I was a counselor in this law office. And I met way more lawyers than I met therapists, but I had wonderful clinical supervisors in and out of the office. And they really opened the door to seeing mental health in indigent community, people who didn't maybe have resources.
Yeah.
And then from there, I ended up working in a very nice private family-owned treatment center where people had a lot of resources.
Yeah.
And what was interesting is mental health was mental health.
Right.
It was... whether it was trauma with no money or trauma with lots of money, we were still treating trauma.
The same kind of issues.
Yeah. And that fascinated me. And so that really had me thinking, wow, wellness is important anywhere. It's about connectivity and relationships.
Yeah. So you decide to open up your business at that point.
So I did I had started my practice, actually next month will be 10 years.
Crazy. Congrats.
Thank you. And over 10 years, it's taken a lot of different shapes. Some of those attorneys I worked with were great. They hired me to do mitigation work, which was more forensic assessments and sometimes testifying. So I did that. I, I would go in and out of treatment centers because I have a passion for recovery, doing groups. And I'm also licensed or certified in expressive art therapy and hypnosis and NLP.
Okay.
So I would go and do these things, and it kept my week creative and it kept me connected. So my practice has looked different in many ways, and then had individual clients in a traditional brick and mortar office.
Yeah.
But along the way, it really changed through COVID too. Like, opening my practice was one thing 10 years ago and then completely changed with the need for mental health changing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So COVID really changed that landscape.
So much so, you know, I really think this movement to talk about wellness in the corporate setting. And when I say corporate setting, I mean anywhere of an office of 2 to 5,000 or,
you know, any business, right?
Any business. And we're allowed to talk about it now. We should be talking about it. You know, you don't want to be the CEO who's not talking about it,
because
it's pretty trendy.
Yeah.
And what we saw on the other side of that is, as a kind of one woman show, I had never taken insurance because it had never been worth it.
Sure.
But during COVID, when things halted in the beginning, I thought, well, why not? You know, so I got paneled. It's a pretty daunting task. So I did that. But it paid off. I got to work with a lot of different companies who were sending in clients who normally wouldn't have come to counseling. Mm-hmm. They were using those EAP benefits. They were using traditional benefits. So that changed my practice. And from there, it just kind of blew up.
Yeah.
You know? And what I saw is, as much as I love booking a lot of individual clients, I really see the need in the work setting so much.
So I guess let's go back, like, before COVID a little bit. And, like, why do you think it was, like, mental health? Like, I don't think mental health, like, just became an issue.
Right.
It just was never talked about before. So why do you think that, why do you think it was never talked about before? Or why, like, it was never, like, okay to talk about, right? I mean, obviously in some circles it was talked about, but in some circles, like, it just, like, you had to just... It was just your problem. You had to deal with it.
Yeah. I mean, this is one of my favorite things to talk about too, is, you know, the development of it. But if you look at social work, it's been around a really, really long time. So social work is one of our older helping professions that's licensed, credentialed, and it's regulated across state lines. Mental health counseling, actually, we really started as vocational counselors with soldiers coming back, not being able to work. And what did we see? We saw trauma. And trauma that we define as, like, capital T trauma, huge traumas. We think of combat veterans, you know, maybe we think of really heinous or atrocious abusers or people who have survived natural disasters.
Yeah.
But what we have seen over the course, I would say the last 20 to 30 years, is a lot of these small T traumas, loss, impact of, you know, maybe a car accident or loss of a child or suicide increasing.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to be talking about this. I mean, if we're an employer and we have staff and they're working a full-time salary job, their life is impacted by many, many, many small T traumas throughout the course of their life.
Yeah.
And if we want them to be retainable and successful, and we want our companies to have good profit margins and be well, we have to start talking about it. And I think companies know this. And legislation has changed.
Yeah.
Big pharma has changed. You know, there's a lot that goes into the trend. And sometimes it comes out of atrocity or tragedy.
Sure.
But now we're seeing, I think, the benefit of it being talked about.
What's up, Palm Harbor? It's your host, Donnie Hathaway. If you are looking to stay up to date with all things Palm Harbor, then visit my website. It's palmharborlocal.com. Super simple. You can sign up there, join the locals, where I'll be sharing more information on local events, local history, and what's happening in Palm Harbor. You know, I really want to create and add more value to you as a listener for spending your valuable time tuning into my podcast. So join me there, keep listening, and remember, together, we keep Palm Harbor local.
Right. Do you think it's like mental health has become like some of these smaller things that kind of weigh on, like, the mental wellness of a person, like, as life has become more complicated?
Yeah.
Right. Like, now we're having more issues.
Yeah.
Mental health, or more challenges with mental illness, because of just how difficult like day-to-day life is, right?
I do. I think, you know, and there's also if we were tracking this with charts and bar graphs and all that, you know, it'd be interesting to see where social media and the
right.
The visibility, right? Like if we don't have the ability to say Me Too, and I know Me Too has changed over the course of years and what that means, but if we didn't know those things were happening, we might not have focused on that or connected.
Yeah.
But we do know. We know so much more now. And you're right. It is cumulative. It does stack, right? So if we have something that happened and we didn't treat it, but we stuffed it or suppressed it, mm-hmm. what did we see in early COVID? We saw everyone's trauma coming to the surface.
Yeah.
And part of that is point of reference. I know in my lifetime, I have probably never used the words quarantine, pandemic, you know, stay at home, social distance.
Right.
I just have never had those concepts. So if my brain, like the neurobiology of the trauma, if my brain can't access that point of reference, my fear is going to go up.
Yeah.
It's instinct, right? As developed and as advanced as we are, we're primitive. We want to outrun the dinosaur and the falling boulder.
Right.
So when we have something that we don't know or understand, we go back to a high level of fear because it's instinct to keep us safe.
Yeah.
And so what I'm seeing two and a half years later now is everyone's adrenals are shot, our central nervous systems are on hyperdrive, our bodies are maxed out, taxed out, the bandwidth, we said everybody lost that.
Yeah.
You know, so hopefully we're getting back to a place now where it's like, okay, what does normal look like? How can I reset the rhythm of my life with intentionality and not go back to what it was, but create something that has balance and order?
Yeah. And part of that too is being able to recognize that too, instead of just staying on this path of like anxious or fear, you know.
Exactly. Yeah. And in the corporate setting, you know, working with people, maybe they were all sent home for extended times and then coming back. Well, I'm air quoting the environment of work has changed forever as we know it.
Yeah.
And the hybrid models, the adaptability. So some people are really struggling. I don't want to get up and drive. I don't want to go. I don't want to be like, you have a beautiful office here, but maybe there's people it was hard to come back, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So looking at what are those things that we can do to help that mental wellness landscape at work? Because if they've had a lot of things come up, they're going to need support to work through those.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What does it look like when I'm trying to think of like just being self-aware, like, hey, I need like just recognizing that, you know, I need help in some fashion or another.
Sure.
I'm struggling with this. Are most people like self-aware to recognize that themselves, or is self-awareness like just in a select group of people?
Yeah, we would all love to think we're really self-aware. Yeah. But you know, that comes with EQ and our emotional quotient, our intelligence. Most of us are not, but I say we know ourselves too, right? We know patterns and mental, I would say, unwellness shows up differently based on people. Like if you're normally the joiner and all of a sudden you're not joining, if you're the person that coordinates the lunches and the things and you've kind of checked out, like we want to look for patterns in people. Mm-hmm. And anytime there's a break in their pattern, we want to understand, do they see that break in that pattern? Mm-hmm. Have they noticed they've withdrawn, you know, or maybe they're the person that is always able to listen and they're patient and now they seem more irritable or short tempered. Mm-hmm. They might not be aware of that, you know? So building support systems in our personal life, but also in our work culture that are appropriate, where we see, if we see a break in pattern, how do we address that? How do we help people become more aware?
Yeah.
Because we're all going to go through things that throw us off our center.
Yeah. You know? So I want to talk about like the, like more into like the work setting as well. But before that, like what are just some, like good overall, like mental wellness, like practices that somebody could do just to make sure that they like kind of maintain their mental wellness?
Sure. Yeah. That's a great question. We could do a whole series on that. No. I could share my own personal that helped me.
Yeah. So it's different for everybody, right?
It is. And so what works for me, and if someone was to tell me years ago, I would be a morning person, I would laugh because I'm like Olympic gold medalist and hitting the snooze, but I don't do that anymore. But, you know, for me, having a morning ritual is very, very important, and it looks different every day. Some days I'm doing more meditation or journaling. I also practice art as a form of just process art. So sometimes I'm in my art journal or painting or collaging. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I'm reading or doing a study. But no matter what, I take that time in the morning because I want my brain to have time to let go of yesterday.
Yeah.
If I wake up and I rush right into the catching my thoughts too, I'm not late. I'm not, you know, I was late today, but you know, in the morning, if we wake up rushed and hurried, the mind is going to go right back to yesterday's worries.
Yeah.
And I don't want that to be present in my day to day. I want today to literally be a fresh start, a clean slate. And I want to feel hopeful in the day. So pacing the rhythm of my day is important. So even if my day starts, if I have to be with these new high school hours, oh my goodness, we're out the door so early with my daughter.
Yeah.
So I've had to not make excuses and set that alarm back really early.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes that means a 4:30 a.m. wake up.
Yeah.
But I notice the difference when I don't do that. Like my ability to sit and be present and hold space, as we would say in the clinical language, and really just hold space for people to be safe, to unload trauma. I won't have that ability for them if I don't do that for myself.
Yeah.
And then I really do a midday check-in every day, whether it's a 7-minute meditation, breathing exercise. I check in with my central nervous system. And I've noticed as I've gotten busier, you know, I feel that in my body. So I really want to just work on mindful breathing, check that inner critic, that self-thought, what's going on.
Yep.
And then end of the day, I definitely do a check-in. Now, what I'm talking about, like some days I'm working 12, 14-hour days. So I'm not trying to sell anything that a busy person can't buy.
Like,
and this isn't anything expensive. It's free.
Right.
It's tapping into an inner resource. The other thing I like to do is I know that my mind can get me in trouble. So I love if I do have downtime listening to a podcast, connecting with people. Mm-hmm. I know that I need that for my mental wellness. If I isolate, that's probably a sign I'm isolating and something that's not productive or negative.
Sure.
So building on that, I always ask people, what are your wellness practices? You know, and then movement is huge. Anytime I can add in a long nature walk or, you know, some yoga, I tend to do more of the slower things. I used to do a lot more of the fast things, but now I really enjoy, you know, restorative yoga or deep breathing, things like that. So I'll ask people, what are they doing in their wellness practices that start with that?
And I think, like for me, it was challenging to like, when I started the, like some of these morning habits and everything, it was like, I need to do all of these, you know?
Right.
And so it was hard for me to let go and be, and now with kids too, it's challenging because it's flexible.
Yeah.
And you have to be like patient with yourself. Like some mornings are going to be great and some aren't.
That's right.
You know,
that's right. And having the grace for it to be flexible. It's really about intentionality. Am I intending to show up? And then can I roll with it a little bit?
Yeah.
And you have little kids. So every season and stage of parenting for me has brought challenges.
Yeah.
It's brought great things. But like right now we're navigating the early, early mornings, you know, so just adjusting to every season of parenthood too.
Yeah. And those certain things that you do is what keep you kind of grounded and able to transition through those stages.
Right. Because what you're really talking about too on a deeper level without using the word is co-regulation. And we see this trend going on a lot. There's a lot of TikTok videos, a lot of books out there, but I can't have that, again, that space for someone else if I am running at a stressful speed internally.
Yeah.
So I have to co-regulate. I have to go, what's going on with me? You know, mental health during COVID was really interesting. I had done a workshop and talked to some other colleagues. It's really the first time professionally I've also had to navigate simultaneously what's going on for my clients as well as for me.
Mm.
You know, I have never experienced that in my life where, unless it was maybe situational, like a hurricane or something short, but it was the first time I was wondering, did we have enough toilet paper in COVID season one? Like, I don't know, like, you know, but I'm having to show up and work with people but then go home and find out like what's our next step at home too.
Yeah.
And clients coming and I'm used to going, oh, well, I'll read an article. I'll get trained. I'm certified. And I didn't know. So really holding a lot of space in the unknown and realizing how much that was taking out of me.
Sure.
So I needed a lot more time to recharge and rebuild that part of me that was scared.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's interesting.
Yeah.
I could keep going on and on about that conversation. but let's talk about like in the workspace and kind of what that looks like. And like what is, you know, like what's the responsibility of the owner, right? Is it to hold time or to allow time for, you know, these midday breaks or just educating the employees and stuff, their staff, like on these different techniques and mindsets and everything?
Yeah, it's such a hot topic, right? Like how do we do it? How do we build it in? I just had coffee with a CEO of a local or big organization recently, and we were asking this. She's like, do I tell them to do yoga in the morning or do I buy yoga mats for them? And, you know, I think we're looking for this. So my first question would be, what already exists? Like, what's already working? Let's build in that affirmative empowered state in your company. Like, what's going to work for your type of people? Are you working with type A high executive sales and commission based, you know, where are you working with people who are exhausted from little kids? And, you know, so it's really all about systems and consistency and the structure and implementation of that system.
Yeah.
So what I would say is creating a culture where you want to inspire your staff to be well. And then what does that wellness look like?
Yeah.
I don't think we have to go over the top and be Google with like, you know, the hammocks and the giant bean, you know, that might not be everybody's, you know, desire anyway. But I do think we have to look at how are we leading in a way that does motivate. And sometimes it's having people tap into those inner resources like water challenges or steps challenges or, you know, building camaraderie around wellness and then having managers that promote EAP. Like if you have counseling offered through your benefits, are you talking about it? Are you normalizing it?
Mm-hmm.
Are you working with people flexibility to pop out during the day to go to a counseling session and come back?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that kind of basic, you know, I really love back to the basics when we talk about wellness is we don't have to overcomplicate it. And if we are, we're probably doing it wrong.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. That makes sense. And so it's really just dependent on, I mean, just like wellness, right? It's going to be different for each person. It's going to be different for each business.
Right.
And kind of what that looks like.
Yeah. I mean, I recently spoke to a group of executive bankers, upper level management training. Well, that was very different than me speaking to first responders.
Mm, yeah.
You know, they're going to need a whole lot more resetting of their central nervous systems than the bankers in a different way.
Right.
Right. Not that their job is very stressful, but in a different way.
Yeah. You know? So I wrote this question down, but I think I know the answer and it's, but I'm curious to kind of talk about it anyway. It's like, who needs wellness?
Right.
Everybody.
Yeah. Anyone with a pulse.
Right? Yeah.
A human.
and it's, yeah, I think, and now it's become more and more, right? Like a lot of the self-help books, like that's where I was first introduced into it, right? Like the different mindsets and just priming yourself for the day. Do you think that's becoming like more and more like mainstream and like just like that morning routine or those certain habits, whether it's journaling, meditating?
Yeah.
I'm becoming more and more mainstream now.
I do. And I think wellness can also be equated in the corporate setting. Like I love to talk with managers and bosses about it equating to safety. Like, does your staff feel safe to come on a day when they're 40% or do they need to call out? Like, do you create a work culture where it's safe to come here and know that they might need to take a bathroom break and cry because they have an aging parent or a sick child or they're going through a divorce or they've just lost a loved one?
Mm-hmm.
Or is this an environment that says those emotions aren't safe here?
Mm-hmm.
Wellness is about being safe to feel feelings, but still know what's expected of you. I think a lot of bosses think if I create a culture of emotions, and I'm air quoting again.
Yeah.
Then am I going to lose productivity? Are we not going to be able to hit these benchmarks and stay in our lane? No, actually your retainability is going to go up.
Yeah.
Your PTO days are going to go down and people are going to feel safe. And what we know now through research is the, you know, the opposite of depression. It's not joy. It's not happiness. It's purposefulness. Mm-hmm. So if you can connect and lead your people in a way to feel safe and purposeful, they're going to reach out and say, I need more support. What's that look like for me? And we want to train those managers in a corporate setting to know that it's not just about a skill set. It's about a human condition holding space. And sometimes our people just need 15 minutes to go, oh my gosh, thank you for letting me talk to you. Now I'm going to go get back to work. I've cleared my head.
Right.
Now I can go focus on what you really want me to produce and do.
Yeah.
You know?
And they're probably gonna, at the end of the day, like they're probably going to be more productive than they were the other way.
And grateful. And they're not going to feel like, wow, I need to go dust up that resume and look what's out there, because this is not a place that can, you know, foster wellness for me during my hardest time in life.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. All really good stuff.
Yeah.
I appreciate you sharing that. I could keep going on and on, but let's, so I want to ask you one last question. And, so being local here, what is, and you got to pick one.
Uh-oh.
So you got to pick one of your favorite spots, right? It could be a business, it could be a park, a beach, whatever.
Yeah.
But if you had one place to go, like where are you going?
Like for my wellness outing? Like
for your wellness
my
outing.
Wellness date with myself. So it's kind of a toss up right now. It changes all the time, but I have two. Can I have two?
All right, you can have
break
two.
I always had to break one rule. Okay, so.
Everyone always tries to break the rules.
Break the rules, right. Okay, so I would say my first one would be walking the Dunedin Causeway. And then picking up a delicious poke bowl from Frenchie's Seafood Market.
Oh, okay.
And then my second would be walking either, Wallspring Park in, is that considered Tarpon?
Palm Harbor.
Is it Palm Harbor? Yep. Okay, good. Yep. I know it's like right on the line there.
Yeah.
And then also Fred Howard.
Okay,
Park,
cool.
And walking there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, I love all things local too. I just, I love.
So like it's, I love those because those are all like great spots.
Yeah.
And that's one of my favorite spots too, especially the causeway.
Right.
Just being outside.
Yes.
In nature.
Right. And nature doesn't hold trauma, right? It just, the trees can just hear all our problem, everything. It doesn't absorb it. We can just really let it go in that space.
Yeah. You know? I love that.
Yeah.
Love it. Cool. Well, thank you so much for being here and sharing your story.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. This was great.
Yep. So one last thing, how can people, and we'll put it all in the show notes and everything, but how can people reach out to you if they have questions or want to just contact you?
Sure. I'm on Instagram and I do have a website. It's going to be changing, but I can give you all that information and they can call. Unfortunately, my practice is full with private clients, but I am open to referrals for corporate speaking and training.
All of that.
So awesome. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thank you again for listening to another episode of Palm Harbor Local. I really hope you got a ton of value out of today's episode. Now, if you're looking to connect with the guest or just get more information on the episode, then you can check the description below. I'll have all the links in the episode as well as a link back to my website. It's palmharborlocal.com where you can stay up to date on what's going on with the podcast and sign up there to join the locals. Let's get after it this week. And remember, together, we keep Palm Harbor Local.